Alright, there's gotta be something on.
They say the word shit like 100 times.
You make the bully drink piss.
Whoa!
What is this exactly about?
Sean's parents are basically on the verge of a divorce.
We'll come back to bite them in the ass later.
I always wonder, like, why was it always that kid's problem?
Did you see that?
But I'm sure if I'm quite drunk enough to see me to be.
Of course, yeah. Nobody saw it. You know why? Because no one saw this movie.
It's like Avenue Q, only worse.
Yeah, it was definitely a rental for me.
On 3D, plus the IMAX 3D, plus the other theater had it.
Which was not really that hard.
Wait, where did he come from?
Get it up.
One of those covers of the video store, you remember?
Oh, this is that movie? Yep, of course. Yep, what in the hell is this, and why is it on my TV? Yeah, I'm gonna have to catch this from the beginning.
What am I watching?!
All right, it is time to sail on into the night and get lost in the shadows, because I still believe that thou shalt not kill. I am Dave the Clone, and you found Hollow Nine's What Am I Watching Tonight? We're here to talk about The Lost Boys. Joining me on the panel of learned doctors of TV and film self-proclaimed by our network are Gomez Not Adams.
Hello!
And all the way from the fangirl zone, Sean Fangirl S.
Hello, hello.
Unfortunately, the Coreys had to cancel their appearance at the last minute. But we will be talking about Hamster and Fell Dog plenty. So
the remaining Corey, anyway.
Oh man, R.I.P. That is crazy, okay. Right?
I totally had posters up when I was younger.
The Coreys.
I did.
Before
I have.
Before or after 87?
Before.
Wow, because that's the beginning of Corey Mania.
I think it was like right before, so it was like right in that time. Yeah,
this is the first.
This was the first yeah. Corey movie.
Yeah.
Yes, but they were all over Teen Beat previous and all that crap. Because this is what launched.
As Gomez it's and I look at each other like, what the fuck?
Yeah, I got crickets there for a second.
They were all over what?
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, they were all over the boardwalk in this movie. They were all over all kinds of being like macho and gay at the same time. And I that was a totally harsh use of the word gay there, so I apologize to all the audience listening, but I mean, this was the 80s. This was when they were sort of defining what the first derogatory use of that word was, and I believe it was completely with Corey Haim's wardrobe in the film.
There's also sexy saxophone guy.
Oh my god, Tim Capello? A sexy saxophone guy? And he's still a beast, man. I saw a video, somebody ran into him at a convention not too long ago, and they did an entire interview where every question started with, "Do you still believe this?" And he had to answer a question like, "Yes, I still believe in magic. Yes, I still believe in this." He was a beast. He's an old, jacked beast.
I have no clue who that is.
The saxophone guy playing
well,
the song.
Well, I gathered that part.
I think that's how
he's made a lot of money off of that role.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
for a
you.
Bit part.
Yeah, yeah. Every show he's ever played in his life, when they play that song, it's like, you know this one! I would have loved to have been at that beach show, man. Like, when I think about it, I'm like, watching it tonight, I was like, damn, man, that guy's just, like, up on stage having a grand old time. And the whole world was just, like, this really chill place, apparently. In Santa Carla, the murder capital of the world.
Which Santa Cruz, where this was actually shot, was not a fan of. Evidently, there had been a serial killer that had been running loose in the 70s.
Draining people's blood from their bodies and filling it with glitter.
Not that much, but there was definitely a spate of people actually going missing and turning up dead at the time. So, like, thanks for bringing that up.
I'll tell you one thing. If all the corpses buried around here stood up and walked all at the same time, we'd have one hell of a population problem.
This movie was chock full of one-liners like that. I'll be doing my best to not butcher like I did that one.
Okay, this movie also demonstrated that vampires do not sparkle.
Only their blood.
Only their blood. Glitter in the blood.
Glitter, don't drink the water. There's vampire blood in the water. Yeah, I mean, there's totally unexplained plumbing explosions later.
it's high pressure blood.
This movie is such a, and it's funny too. All right, so I've watched, I watched this on Blu-ray because I, you know, I've owned several copies of it. I owned the first DVD that came out, the original, just like shitty. All it had is the movie and the trailer. Then there was like the Criterion Collection. It was a double disc, and it had a bunch of documentary. I think most of the stuff that's actually on the Blu-ray as well. And so there was a, you know, a behind the scenes thing with Joel Schumacher, who directed the film, and they were talking about how when it was being made, it was one of those things where like they would ask him, "What are you making? Are you making a comedy, or are you make like a dark comedy, or are you making a vampire movie, or is it a teen movie?" Or what? And he would just go,
yes.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. And I think it's an interesting balance of all three. And so, yeah, this is, I think, one of the ones where we're being affectionate. We're going to make fun of the fucking movie, but this is definitely a classic. Make no mistake about it. Anyone listening to this, if you're in that generation that's just like, what's the big deal about this Lost Boys thing? Fuck you. Shut up and watch the movie. Because
okay, if somebody hasn't watched it at this point.
Yeah, yeah. For
actually,
real.
Actually, very simply, this is a documentary about 1987.
And what boardwalk culture was like in California.
It's not even just boardwalk culture. I mean, you've got the two quarries. Mm. You've got the mullet.
Oh,
you've
God.
Got the fashions.
The mullet. The
or lack
mullet.
Thereof.
There was video this stores. Is, the video the, store. The old
the video store. The comic shop.
Yeah.
I mean, this is 1987.
And you know what's funny? Okay, so I'm one of the people that when I watch movies like this, I actually get to a weird level of pragmatism where I'm like, you mean to tell me that comic book shop is selling enough comic books to actually sustain itself as a business on that boardwalk? Whereas everyone else is like, dude, it's literally just a place where a couple scenes take place. And I'm like, no, how the fuck was that? I mean, it was the 80s. Things were different. The economy.
And it actually was a real comic shop.
Really?
Yeah. Well, I
and
mean,
it actually and it doesn't exist anymore because it actually got taken out during an earthquake. And the owner actually relocated and he still runs a comic shop.
No shit. Wow.
Yeah,
comic shops are,
you actually see him playing pinball in the back.
Comic shops are like notoriously on the verge of extinction, aren't they? Like in certain, you know, you wouldn't think so from all the cons we go to with the comic book presence at those things, but I remember the comic book biz and industry was at one time far more booming than it is today. Now it's sort of becoming movies, but I've always sort of already looked at movies. Like, my DVD collection is my comic book collection. You know what I mean? So, I don't know. I guess there's a little bit of a generational gap there. But that's cool to hear that, you know, especially in a way it's iconic because I think anything having to do with this movie is fucking iconic. Kiefer Sutherland in his ultra prime, you know what I mean? As, like, head of the vampire clique.
Absolutely.
You got Bill in there, who before he was Bill of Bill and Ted, when
Alex
he was
Winter.
Just Alex Winter.
Winters.
Named
Alexander
Mark,
Winter.
Named Alex. Marco in the movie, though, his character
yes.
name. Oh, and of course, I always loved that Kiefer Sutherland's character was David. I was like, yeah, motherfuckers, head vampire. That's me.
Except he wasn't.
Wasn't the
yeah,
head
like, well.
Twist ending.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, you've had 20-something years to get, you know.
Almost 30. Almost 30.
Coming, up,
guy,
on 30,
with
coming
it.
Up on 30.
Now, okay.
And we could, I mean,
dad.
There was.
I know, we kind of. Oh, wait. Did
the
we
grandfather was part of, I think, the culture that we didn't talk about either. The sort of, like, once you get inland from the beach, you just have, like, big expand like he lives kind of on a farm almost, or at least in a very ruralish looking area, because he's got a lot of land, no one else is near him, and he's a straight up taxidermist or some crazy shit. He pretty much could be a serial killer if we didn't know any better. When they pull up, he's playing dead on his porch and doing a damn good job of it too. Like, that's something, that's a life skill. You need that. You need to be able to play dead.
Well, when you've got as many vampires as you do in this town, you better have some skills.
One thing about living in Santa Carla, I never could stomach all the damn vampires.
Don't you think that's something you might want to tell them when they, you know, we
don't
win
scare
with
the
you?
Kids. Never mind my flensing area.
Oh God, or the fact that I'm growing pot right outside my kitchen window and no problems there. Oh, it looks like so much of a more fun era to have lived through. I was a little kid during the 80s. I wish I was like my age now during the 80s. That shit would have been amazing. So, yeah. So
I don't know about that. Okay. It's like we think back. It's like, maybe not.
Let's see. How did the AIDS epidemic?
Oh, jeez. Shit. You had to bring that up. Anyway, well, let's get back on track. The story of the film actually surrounds this family, a Birkin family, a single mom and her two boys. Older boys, like Michael would be, what, a senior in high school, we're assuming, or a junior maybe?
Or possibly he's just graduated.
Yeah, well, she keeps mentioning when school starts, so I think, and one of the things I did in prep for this episode was watch all the deleted scenes on the Blu-ray, and there's about 15 minutes worth of them, and there is a lot in the deleted scenes that was, I don't want to go and say after school special-ish feeling, but it definitely developed a lot more of like how close they were as a family and how much like they were all really into being a part of each other's lives. Like the mom was always like in all the deleted scenes like, oh, my sons. And it was just all about the sons always wanting to help her out. So I think there's in the movie that we wind up watching, I think there is a certain level where you do feel like there's a big disconnect, at least between Michael and the mom. And that maybe Sam is still young enough that he still likes hanging out with his mom. But it just felt like there was a little bit more strain to the relationship. And I think some of the deleted scenes would have, like, probably tempered that a little bit. Or at least made us feel a little bit more for when Michael stops talking to his mom later in the movie. And she's trying to, like, reconnect with him. But not to get so deep on a movie that's either a comedy or a vampire movie, you know.
Or a thinly veiled modern update of Peter Pan.
Ooh.
Well, that's where they took the name.
It was actually supposed to be much more. The original script was actually much more Peter Pan.
Really?
Following those tropes.
Yeah, actually, I was just reading that too. That it was supposed to be like fifth, sixth grade kids.
Exactly. Really? Wow.
But like the Frog Brothers were originally supposed to be like these chubby Boy Scouts, not necessarily running around. The mom's name was originally Wendy. So they took a look at that script and said, you know what, let's make this like a little bit older, a little bit sexier.
Yeah.
Let's ditch some of the Peter Pan references.
Let's hip this shit up because,
yes,
God,
exactly.
Man, I almost am like sickened hearing this. Like, it's, like, as you guys are telling me, I'm like, what? Stop sullying my vision of this fucking film. No way. This movie, I remember watching this, probably when I was a teenager. I know it was one of the movies when I was young. I wasn't able to watch horror movies until, I don't know, I was in, like, my teens, maybe, like, you know, even 12, 13, because I just had very vivid nightmares, and so it was to the point where my mom straight up was like, I'm not dealing with your bullshit, like, I'm not dealing with you staying up all night and not being able to sleep, so you're not allowed to watch this. And then I finally watched it when it was on, like, Channel 11 or something, you know, so it was sort of, like, edited for TV, but
yes.
Still there was enough in there that you're like, damn, this movie's fucking badass. And, again...
The old WPIX.
Yes, yes, Shocktober. In October, when it would just be nothing but horror movies, and it was Shocktober.
It's like 4 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon.
And you're like, yes, we're watching The Lost Boys. And plus, I'm sure I've said it in a bunch of podcasts across the network and in my history of podcasting, but where I grew up in North Jersey, in Tenafly, New Jersey, seeing movies was a big deal. Every fucking buddy saw every fucking movie. Like, there were kids in kindergarten who had seen the entire Nightmare on Elm Street series up until that point, and I was nowhere near allowed to watch that stuff for a while. But right around the time I started watching, you know, things like The Lost Boys on Shocktober, there was always a week during Shocktober they showed like 4 Freddy movies, and I started to like really get into those too. But I remember watching The Lost Boys and just being like, man, this movie is so badass. And then I would just rent it like all the time because I wanted to see the full-in, uncut version. I wanted to see all the blood squirt out of the guy's head when they kill the people at the bonfire.
And I just want to step back a second and just point out the fact that you weren't allowed to watch horror movies, but you saw Barbarella when you were 4.
Yeah, this could totally explain so much about why my relationship life is a fucking mess right now.
Just thought I needed to like, build a little bit of continuity between the episodes here.
And I like that we're continuing the arc through our series of podcasts. So anybody who's stuck with us through all the What Am I Watching history here is like, oh shit, we're keeping notes now. We're keeping notes on different psychoses that you all have. And Clone's front and center, man. He's letting the shit fly. You guys talking about mom letting him watch Barbarella. Like, dear God, why?
Oh, my God. You guys are killing me. This came after the Goonies, though. So mm-hmm. that's why I was like...
And it had a little bit of a Goonies feel to it, you know?
Well, this is why I was a fan.
Hence my Never Say Die t-shirt that I'm wearing today.
I'm pretty sure this was why Corey Feldman was cast.
Right, right. They actually... He mentions that in the documentary on the Blu-ray is actually called Hamster and Fell Dog, and it's like a 5-minute compilation of a couple interviews with both of them. But yeah, he mentions, what did he audition for the part that Corey wound up getting? There was some shit like that where like they both were auditioning for the same part and one of them got it and the other one was like, I know Corey Feldman mentions being a little like, who the fuck is this Corey Haim guy? Is like someone else out there with the same first name as me trying to be a star? And it's like, and Corey Haim is the one who reached out to Feldman when they both got the parts in the movie and saying, hey, man, let's hang out. Let's become friends. It's almost like, can you imagine that? Like saying, hey, yo, dude, let's just become like a new dynamic duo of Hollywood. Like, okay, cool. Let's do that.
Well, I think part of it as well was the fact that all the other actors were on the older side.
True.
And so they couldn't, you know, go to the after parties and drink all night.
Yeah.
Because their parents are actually there with them. So they kind of had to hang out with each other and go to the arcades.
Yeah, yeah, or probably sneak off and smoke pot or whatever they were doing.
That too. Grab beers together.
I'm sure Kiefer was bringing them some stuff.
Yeah.
Your kids share this.
I'll tell you, man, one of the things I loved about watching the Blu-ray of this was how it looked like this was made yesterday. And you're like, I know it couldn't have been because Kiefer Sutherland doesn't look like this anymore. But geez, man, these guys all looked so cool. Like, to me, this is one of the movies growing up when I did finally watch it that, like, defined different levels of what cool was. You know what I mean? Like, I thought, like, being the Jason Patrick type was, like, super awesome when you're trying to, like, pursue chicks. You know what I mean? Like, he's just, like, this, like, this kind of, like...
I'm a stalker.
Yes, but, like, in a...
a lot about your relationship status.
In a cool way, though. Like, in a way that it's like, yeah, but I'm so cool, man. Like, I'm not stalking you. I'm chasing you. You know, it's a little different. It's, like, something sexual
and then you,
about it.
And then you have Corey Haim, who's just confused.
Wearing a fucking...
Because he's got the Molly Ringwald poster and the shirtless Rob Lowe.
Oh, God, that was terrible. The poster and he's wearing, like, what looks like a curtain off of the fucking windows as a jacket when he's walking around the comic book store by himself.
Oh, my God, you guys are killing me. You guys are, like, noticing all this little stuff. I want to bring up really quick.
I would say, why don't you take us back, Sean? Take the wheel. Drive for a little while.
Let's go back to when I was a wee little fangirl. And I was like, oh my God, the cords are so cute. And who's this Jason Patrick guy? Because, oh my God. And he's got an earring. Oh my
yeah,
God.
Yeah, Jason Patrick. See, look, that's what I'm talking about right there. Look at that. Listen to what she just said. Chicks dug Jason Patrick, and he was a stalker. Fuck that. Fuck that shit. I'm right. Jason Patrick is badass, yo.
Gritty Corey Haim's character has an earring too, but
it's in the
his, you know what him it was all because he had dimples and I had dimples and I was like, oh wait, well I have dimples. I didn't
wait,
have
Corey Haim had a an earring.
Yeah, he had a yeah, and he had a dimple
tiny,
when he
tiny little stud thing.
Ah.
Him and his brother apparently bonded over that.
You're blinded by the shirt.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, the shirts were so loud. There was just the color, like the pinks and the fucking shapes. I had shirts like that, so I know. But I mean, damn.
It's like a Miami Vice episode through a
true in California. That's why it has that like the rug of the country got shaken out and whatever crap was on it like clung to the edge out in L.A. and west all the way to the water.
I have a question for you guys. Let's get past the fashion because fashion was horrible.
Well, that whole montage of the
we
boardwalk
love 80s parties. Come on.
I mean, like the boardwalk montage of the beginning, like establishing Santa Carla, like how many different crazy looks that were such and, like 80s and, iconic looks. You know?
And I love the fact that they just took basically like, oh, look, random person on the street. Yeah, we're going to take some footage of you.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
That's
just,
all that was.
And sign this that says like, we can use it. Oh, I'm sorry, Sean, go ahead.
Wasn't there a lot of roller skating and shit?
There was roller skating. There were two dudes pushing. One was pushing another dude in a shopping cart. There were a lot of like just what they used to call the punk look. I don't know if I'm even allowed to say it that way. You know,
yeah, no, absolutely. It was the fashion punks.
But yeah, so it was like the streaks of different colored hair, like you know, like dark hair with blue streaks in it and shit, and the eyeliner. Everybody with eyeliner. There was a guy who looked sort of Christ-like. He had a hood and like a weird beard.
And that was actually like a Christian nomad that they found that was like walking around.
Hey, you want to just turn to the camera? Thank you very much. We're moving on. Just
yeah, pretty much.
This guy. Just keep going.
But he worked with the vibe of the film. So
and really, I also love at one point where it's like Diane Wiest, who played Lucy, the mom, hands Corey Haim, who plays Sam, some money and says, go give those kids some money and tell them to get something to eat. And all of a sudden we cut to like there are these kids dumpster diving for food. You're like, where the fuck are they? What is this? For all you idiots out there who think Twilight defines vampire lore, La Push can suck this place's dick, all right? That's all I'm saying. This place defined, like, an era of time.
It was this in Near Dark.
Yes! They were,
came out same year.
Weren't they? No, I thought weren't they released opposite each other? Like a weekend apart or something like that?
Nah, I don't think that was by design. I think that was by
accident. But it's why Near Dark fucking failed, yo.
I never even heard of that one.
We are totally doing a Near Dark because that movie actually is fucking cool. That's a really cool movie.
Lance Henriksen.
Adrian Pazdar, directed by, what's her name? Fuck! She did Hurt Locker and Point Break. Catherine Bigelow. Bigelow, yeah. Awesome movie.
Yeah, and very, very...
Bill Paxton.
Film than this.
Well, a stronger vampire film. Definitely a strong... And I think, you know what, maybe we should do it next. Maybe we should do a comparison on these two, because I know we're talking about, right now, one of our podcaster elites out there, Carol Lee, is hopefully sneaking into the screening of the Dazed and Confused sequel that nobody fucking knew was happening. So we were going to do Dazed and Confused next, but I'm thinking, since we're doing Lost Boys, Near Dark makes a lot of sense. Because, I mean, I think this movie is a vampire lore, like a movie vampire mythology movie for me. Like, it's got a place in the lexicon. Near Dark is a totally different kind of vampire movie and much more what I think of as a vampire movie when I think of vampire movies.
And it's a much more... Near Dark is a much more of a horror movie than this is.
Yes, this is
very
much,
much so.
This is kind of like an extended series of MTV music videos with a little bit of story in between parts where the music comes in. You know, that's kind of how I would characterize
fair.
A little bit.
I think
this
was probably my first foray into... like vampire, other than like the old
like
actually
Dracula,
seeing
Nosferatu,
yeah, Dracula, and so that's why I think I enjoyed this one so much. But I want to ask you guys, because I was just reading about this, and we were actually talking about this at work because I was trying to get Jess to come on, about Lost Girls. It was supposed to be a sequel made for this that was scripted but never actually released.
Really.
That's a shame.
You know, it sucks, too, because there have been sequels to this movie that were direct-to-video that were garbage as fuck. I mean, oh my god, terrible. We should probably do at least one of them on here at some point. But sounds cooler just from the title, I'll tell you right now.
Well, it says that's why when David's impaled on the antlers, he doesn't disintegrate. Because was supposed to be into that Lost Girls movie.
Really?
But apparently they did a comics miniseries, it says, Lost Boys Reign of the Frogs, which bridged the gap between Lost Boys and then the first sequel, which
Lost Boys 2, The Tribe. Holy
the tribe.
Shit.
See, I am perfectly fine with this being a standalone movie.
Yes, exactly. Leave it the fuck alone.
Yeah.
And all right, here's the only good thing that I, because I've seen The Tribe, and let me just as an aside. For thinking about the way this movie ends, which we will get to at some point. I know we're being very non-orthodox with the way we're talking about this film. We're almost as if we are up at 3 a.m. and just watched it. And we're like, oh, what do we do? Anyway, in The Tribe, at the very end of the movie, because Corey Feldman is the only carry-through from the first movie that appears in this movie, The Tribe. At the end of the second film, Corey Haim shows up to talk to Corey Feldman, and Corey Haim is a vampire. So Sam has become a vampire, and he tells Corey Feldman, who is Edgar Frog or Alan Frog?
Edgar.
Edgar. that there is a master vampire on his way back to Santa Carla, and that Edgar has to be ready to fight him, even though he knows who it is. Now, while this is happening like at night in a park under a street lamp, like near a cool looking tree. It's actually like the horrible, horrible movie that I sat through. I was just so pissed off. And then this happens during the credits, and I'm like, you're fucking kidding me. Why wasn't the whole sequel like this? It's a really cool, well done sequence. And it's cutting back and forth between somebody, you're just seeing their hands like on the wheel and shifting the gears, and you're seeing their feet doing the pedals, and it's somebody driving along the Pacific Coast Highway. And it cuts back and forth between those shots and Corey Haiman, Corey Feldman talking, and he's like, you're going to have to be ready for it because you know who it is. And he goes, your brother was one of the most powerful masters ever to see the West Coast. So basically, one of the Frog Brothers at some point between the end of the first movie and this second fucking garbage movie called The Tribe became not only a vampire but then one of the strongest master vampires ever. So I guess once you become and you make your first kill, which this movie establishes as like the
the point of no return.
Yeah, after that you cannot be saved. And luckily the hot chick romantic lead has not killed anybody yet, or the young child that we're all meant to think, I guess, is her brother, but when you see some of the deleted scenes, he's just another
a kid that they picked off.
Yeah, like completing or continuing the idea of this like Lost Boys mythology, akin, I guess, to the Peter Pan story.
Which is also, I mean, this was also came out, I mean, obviously after the book Interview with the Vampire, but quite a bit before the movie.
Right.
I love so that book.
Yeah.
So the concept of like the immortal the immortal child and all the problems that go with that hadn't really been, I don't think, had quite permeated the popular cultural consciousness.
Yeah, ironically.
But you have to, I mean, just watching this, thinking, oh my God, it's a child, it's a vampire. How old is that child in reality?
Well, ironically, this is something heavily tackled in Near Dark.
As it
one, really?
Of, the one of the main characters is a child vampire who's like hundreds of years old.
And or, he's like, I'm stuck at 12 forever.
Yeah, he's like, can you imagine what that's like knowing that you want to have sex? Like, Jesus Christ. It's pretty cool. It's like a really well done.
Also, and let me in.
Oh, yeah, well, that, see, and that, to me, I think one of the things I'd love to do on this series is kind of be marking these moments in film history to talk about how a movie like Let the Right One In and Let Me In, which is the American remake of Let the Right One In, are really like responses to these concepts that were started here.
Or
you know,
building off of.
And Laddie definitely is an underused, underdeveloped character in that regard, completely in this film. In fact, in the cut that we're watching, that we're talking about, he does seem just like her little brother that she's keeping watch over. And meanwhile, there is at least one deleted scene that features a moment with him that gives you a little bit of an idea of like, oh, he's thinking. He's saying stuff. Like, there's a mind in there at work, whereas in this, he just kind of is like a little
kid.
Like
a feral child.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Very Road Warrior-esque.
See, I thought they had him in there to kind of make Star stay.
Well, that's
and
what,
it wasn't
that's,
just for
was,
her companion.
That yeah, that was okay. Pretty much it.
Okay.
But I think what's also interesting for that is that none of, with the exception of David, and even David's not really developed as a character, per se. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're kind of out there. They're there. They're the young Turks,
yeah,
running around. But there's no real sense of, like, who – I mean, do we have any sense of them as characters other than the fact that vampire number 1 through 3?
Yeah, no. There's one of them that I feel like all of his lines must have been improvs, and he was really trying to make himself stand apart from the crowd. And he was the one who looked like Twisted Sister, the one that they kill in the bathtub at the end of the movie. Because he has a lot of these little lines that I'm like – why the fuck did that make it into the cut? Like, I'm watching it going, like, when they go to the video store. And there's a lot of, you know what, like, for what it looks like on its surface, and maybe I'm just somebody who likes to assign a lot of meaning and kind of, like, extra layers to the way the movie was made because of an affinity I already have for these movies, but there's a scene in particular. It's the scene where Diane Wiest is walking on the boardwalk. Michael and Sam are at the shirtless saxophone player concert on the beach. This is where Michael and first notices Star, and their mom is walking along the business side of the boardwalk, and she hears an actual lost boy calling and crying out for his mom. She takes him by the hand and brings him into the video store. And while she's trying to help this lost boy find his mom, the four lost boys come in and immediately kind of like do the whole, they're almost circling the store like sharks, and they kind of like stop at the young clerk at the other end of the counter. And the Twisted Sister guy says something to her like, there's only one thing I came here to watch. And I'm just like, all right, dude, no one fucking cares about you. You're not a character in this movie. You're literally there so that the guy has a crew with him. That's all. You're a number. That's all you are.
It's like, and you know you're not going to survive to the end of the movie.
Exactly.
There's no way
you're fucking cannon fodder, man. You're an old man's cannon fodder. But what's it called?
So he's a red shirt, is what you're saying?
Yes.
He's more of a mauve shirt.
Yes, a mauve mesh shirt under a suit, under a jacket with tails and a white skinny jeans.
You're laughing at me. That's actually a known term where it's like, it's not just like you just show, not just there to show up and die. We're going to develop you a tiny little bit.
Oh, wait, so what is the, I missed the term because
mauve,
I was,
mauve
shirt. I like it.
Okay. I thought you were just talking about the 80s fashion.
Viridian.
It's like, it's the character that they develop a little bit more, and you're not there just to die. You actually move the plot on a little bit, but at the end of the day, you're still going to die.
Like, his lines at the end when they're fighting, I think, were scripted, but I feel like every other line he had throughout the rest of the movie was improv, except for maybe one. So there's the line with the video store clerk, then later when they're showing Michael the hotel that they've inherited, the hotel that crashed
into the... Oh, the sunken hotel.
And the guy says, you know, he says, so check it out, Mikey. Like, I feel like that was a scripted line, but then when Star comes out and goes, that's enough, he goes, ah, chill out, girl. And I'm like, oh, dude, fuck you. Shut the fuck up. Like, if I was the director, I'd be like, stop fucking talking, dude. Stop it. Stop it. You are not even here, okay? You don't matter. Shut your fucking mouth. No one will know your name. Nobody. Kiefer Sutherland, Corey Haim, Corey Feldman. These are the people. Jason Patrick, this chick, Jamie Gertz. That's it. That is it. You sit over there with Bill. Just shut the fuck up.
Was he a bigger name than...
No.
No. He has no... I don't know his name. I'm calling him the guy who said these shitty lines. I'm like, I don't even... Like, I know Alex Winter because I knew Bill and Ted after that.
That's why I was... No, I was just thinking, was he a bigger name at the time than, like, Alex Winter or...
Alex Winter was nobody. This was before Bill... Like, he was nobody until Bill and Ted, right? Like, that's kind of how that worked. So this is definitely before Bill and Ted. This is, like, he was lucky to be featured as much as he was. And he even had, like, they all had, like, one or two lines, obviously, to kind of give some element of their solidified group. Like, when they do the train... When they go onto the train tracks and hang under the bridge, each one of them has like, Michael wants to know what's going on. Paul, what's going on? That's the Twisted Sister guy. Shit, this is how we figured out his name. I have to do the lines from the movie to be like, Paul.
I just looked up his real name's Brooke McCarter, and his filmography looked like it was all 80s.
And was this the
late
last?
Late 80s, early 90s. That was it.
All right, so this wasn't the last, but it was definitely maybe the first. Paul, what's going on? Wait, who wants to know? Michael wants to know. I don't know, Marco, what's going on? You know, and then they didn't even say the last guy's name, the stereo, the death by stereo vampire. Did we learn his name?
I think they all had names. I don't know if you ever learned. At the end of the day, does it matter?
No, but you know what? For how many times I've seen this movie and for how much I love this movie, I probably should know all their names. You know, but I know David, Marco, and Paul.
Dwayne.
They never said his name then. They never said his name.
The dude who just... Did he... Like, I don't even honestly remember him speaking.
You miss, sucker.
Okay, but here's the thing. Kiefer Sutherland had the most dialogue of all the vampire guys.
And he
did not have much dialogue at all.
He barely had over five lines. And they were all like three syllables.
Like over half of his dialogue consisted of saying Michael.
Come with us, Michael.
I had read something about they said Michael like 118 times in the film.
Michael, Michael.
They use Michael in this film like Tarantino uses fuck.
Mm-hmm. Yep, pretty much. Just in case you forgot his name, it's Michael.
And just in case you forgot that this was not supposed to be a family-friendly podcast.
Yeah.
maybe he should say that at the beginning. Oh, wait, that's what the explicit tag's for.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I don't want to hear any complaints. But if you had them, hollow9podcast@gmail.com is where you want to send them. That's hollow9podcast@gmail.com. Or you could follow us on Twitter @hollow9cast. Imagine that. It's the same spelling. Can you believe it? That's how that works.
I want to hear from the ladies who watched it and were in love with the Corys at the time.
Well, was anybody in love with Kiefer, too? I mean, I kind of get the feeling they all had, like, a sex symbol thing going on. I mean, I know for a fact my mom made it very clear Jason Patrick was super hot in this movie. Which is, thanks, Mom. You fucked me up so bad. Just well, to let many, you know, sharing it with the world.
How many guys were in love with Jamie Kurtz?
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Wait. What is this past tense you're using?
Yeah. This might be.
Have you seen a picture of her recently?
I would say, though, this, I mean, she's been in a bunch of movies, but this is still the quintessential perfect, like, oh, holy God. Like, now, and just to continue my, hey, I watched stuff to prepare for this. In the deleted scenes, she has a couple more moments where she's a little bit more aggressive. Like, you know, like one of the things I always felt in this cut was that at the time when she's sort of explaining to Michael why he hasn't been killed yet and how he was supposed to be her first kill and that it was all because she showed interest in him. Like, yeah, there was clearly interest, but in some of the deleted scenes, she really was more like, hey, yo, you want me? Come here. Like, the whole part where they're chasing her, and Corey Haim is, like, ragging on Jason Patrick a little bit, all of a sudden, she just, like, if I would stop having fucking hiccups right now, I'd be able to tell you. All of a sudden, like, they're walking through the crowd, and, like, as they're walking to get around people, she's there. Like, she stopped, and they didn't see it, and she's waiting for them. And she's like, hey, do you want to talk to me? And he's like, sure. And she's like, then talk. And it was like, you don't have to follow me. Like, she definitely wanted him just as much as she wanted him, as he wanted her. And I think that's something that's a little bit underplayed in this, and they really make it more like Kiefer Sutherland just didn't like at all that she even looked at him, you know, that she even looked at Michael. And that's really the whole reason they tormented him in the first place.
I really took that, yeah, that way. But, I mean, deleted scenes can make, like, a whole world of difference.
Yeah, I honestly would love to see an extended cut of this movie. Like, put all that shit back.
The other girl whose name escapes me, I guess she's in, like, almost all of her scenes were cut. The dark-haired girl. God, I gotta look up her name.
The dark-haired girl.
She's with Star. There was a dark-haired girl. Oh, my God. Why am I...
I'm
just
seeing that.
I am right, totally rewind. Like,
I'm not with
yo.
You. I'm sorry.
Yeah, not
hold
at
on,
all.
I'm
I don't
looking.
Believe this. I don't believe this. Like, I know the dark-haired girl who's the friend of Julia Stiles in 10 Things I Hate About You that I always thought was fucking gorgeous that no one in the world ever talked about.
Kelly Jo Minter. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. She was with Lucy.
Oh, she worked in the video store, right? Yeah, there are deleted scenes with her
as
well.
Yeah, she had... And I... From... Apparently that makes a difference too with, you know, what the hell she's even doing there. And I really hate when they film all this stuff and then they just cut it, because 30 seconds can make all the difference. And yes, a movie that you haven't seen the whole series of Harry Potter,
but
there's a
that...
few things that make like a huge difference, and they cut it. It's like a 30 or 45 second scene. And you're like, well, that makes a whole lot more sense now.
But isn't that kind of the filmmaker's dilemma where, you know, you're supposed to be you're told that, okay, it needs to run X amount of time. Mm-hmm. This is our goal. Where do we cut? What
and
do
I think
we cut?
Back then it was a little more difficult because, like, now shit goes forever, it seems. Some of these movies go 2.5 hours.
Okay, some of them go too long.
Right. Well, I mean,
they have trouble cutting it down to, okay, what actually gets the story told?
Or what story?
It's just bloat.
But it also depends on what story you want to tell. Like, there are some stories that are actually served by having that extra layer, you know, the bloat, as you call it. And I think a movie like this, whereas, you know, what I'll say what we're seeing here is the 1980s, what they would consider the theater-ready fun cut of the movie. It cuts the
like
most
85 minutes, isn't
the
it?
The most streamlined version of the story you can get. It captures all the right amounts of everything you need. You know, you see that there's a family dynamic. You see that there's a family relationship. You see, I mean, there are moments like when they first got to the grandfather's house and Corey Haim is complaining like, oh, there's no TV. You know what no TV means? It's no MTV. And he's like, Sam, we're flat broke. Like, it's like you get that there's a level where all these people care about each other and the way that they talk to each other, that they have learned to depend on each other. But then there's also, like, the buffiness to it, right? Like, there's, like, the kind of, like, flashy, like, punks who are also vampires who are, like, pulling him into staying up all night and doing all kinds of crazy shit, chasing a chick who happens to then turn out to be the lead guy's girl, you know? It's, like, very soap opera-ish, but also, like, very kind of what you'd expect from a little bit of a poppy kind of movie. I don't know. Like, it's hard to really just pin it down to one thing, but, like, if you start throwing in an extra 30 seconds of the video store clerk who trained the mom so that she knew how to do a better job and also kind of maybe filled in some backstory about Santa Carla, it then starts to take on a little bit of a different type of feel, you know? And like I was saying earlier, there's a lot of scenes where she's talking about her relationship with her sons, and we see the dependingness of this family unit, this triad of people who care about each other. And I feel like some of that's lost in what we saw here, but I don't like the movie any less for that, you know?
Well, I mean, they also, I think they developed pretty early on where they show up in California. They've just moved from Arizona. They're flat broke.
She's just gotten divorced.
Because she got divorced and she decided not to go through the messy legal proceedings.
Yeah.
So she didn't want to drag her kids through. She made the decision to kind of cut ties from where she was and move back in with her dad to kind of help her kids out as well. So I think, I mean, right there in those opening scenes, they do a lot to develop that very quickly. And then they kind of let the rest of it just kind of play out. So the question is, yeah, they deleted those scenes. If you go off of those initial scenes, do you still need them?
Right. And it's like, if you never, to me, it's almost like the argument I make about HD. It's like, you know, the ignorance is bliss. If you didn't know this shit existed, you'd probably be fine with what you had. You know, like, I never thought standard def was a problem. Well, now I have HD, so fuck your standard def. I didn't ever think this movie needed supplemental material, but hey, they threw it at me as like a freebie for spending $30 on the movie multiple times, you know? And then I watched it and said, hey,
I missed this.
Well, hey, you know what? I've seen the short version so many times. Jeez, this kind of, it's kind of nice. It's kind of, I mean, there were even scenes with Max that made him a more empathetic character, you know? Like, there's a scene where she goes to his house and we see what his apartment looks like. It's like this really nice townhouse and he has all these like models and stuff that he's built. And like, he's got like old jukeboxes. Like he has a really hip place and she's like really impressed with all the stuff he's accumulated. It very much, you know, adds to that sort of, what we eventually learn is like the Interview with a Vampire. I'd say the sort of the Lestat effect of like accumulating stuff over.
But all Max wanted was to find a nice woman to be mom to his boys.
And what made him notice Lucy? The fact that she immediately took that lost kid and was like, hey, is his mom in here? Like, you know, we're just going to look for this kid's mom. Like he immediately saw like this, genuinely nice protective nature of someone who's already been going through a year of living as the primary caretaker of her two not so young but still not completely adult yet sons, you know?
I have a question. Is he the guy who was in Nightbreed?
Max?
Yeah, I can't remember the character name in Nightbreed.
Let's click on his name on
IMDb. I know,
IMDb.
I'm actually going down right now, and I did.
I was
down
like, why
is
this?
I had it already open before we even started tonight.
I'm like, why is Max so hard to find on here?
No,
Edward Herman?
I didn't know if you guys knew if he was in Nightbreed, if that was the guy I'm thinking of or not.
I haven't seen Nightbreed in forever. Oh my God.
That was
That was 80 something, right? What was?
Yeah,
I guess not.
No, he was not a Nightbreed.
That's sad that it took us this long to figure that out in the instant gratification generation of information availability. I know he was in.
You don't have to type it.
Yeah, he was in Oz. Oh my God, it was so tragic the way he got killed on Oz. That was terrible.
Okay, was there anybody that wasn't tragically killed on Oz?
Oz was such a rough show, man. That was so fucking hard to watch. But it was also amazing, you know? It's like this. It's amazing.
I mean, if it wasn't the gruesome murder, it was the gruesome male rape.
Oh.
They're talking about Oz, ladies and gentlemen, not Lost Boys.
Lost Boys.
A whole different show.
Those boys would be really lost if they were raping each other. No, they were just, you know, there's the whole motorcycle race to the Hudson's Bluff overlooking the point. Where Michael pulls the just you. I was always like, dude, that's how you gotta do it. Like, if you're like about to fight like a bunch of people, like, no, fuck you, just you, dude, just you. I'm challenging just you.
Wait,
you.
Was I the only one that saw that and went, holy shit, they're cribbing directly from Rebel Without a Cause.
Good call.
I didn't catch that, but wow.
I saw this first though as a kid, so to me this is the first thing my mind goes to. I'm like, just you, come on, just you. Come on.
Oh, you take out one, you know, and you hope the rest of them, you know.
Well, I mean, the other thing is...
Because what's it say? You never just fight one asshole.
Yeah, but it's like, you know what? Exactly. If the beef is only with one of them, fuck all the other dudes.
Or,
you know what
but,
I mean?
But like, also with the train tracks, and of course, I think the year before this came out, Kiefer Sutherland was in Stand By Me.
Okay.
Awesome movie.
Okay, but also with a very iconic train scene.
Yes.
Totally different, though, like, as far as the motivation of the characters
Corey
go.
Corey Feldman, yeah. Again.
Corey Feldman making the rounds.
Well, he was, like, he was basically, what was it? He was the Kevin Bacon of the 90s.
Yeah, he's Hollywood's golden child of the 80s, man. He was also, he hits the Friday the 13th franchise, you know what I mean? Like, Goonies, this, Stand By Me.
And what a mess he's become.
And then the Coreys did, according to that Hamster and Feldog documentary, they did like 9 movies together. Dream a Little Dream. They even said it was on the set of Dream a Little Dream 2 that they actually like went for lunch one day and said, you know what, I think it's time for us to start doing our own stuff like without each other. You know, like we've been doing this for long enough. Lost Boys was awesome. Now, Dream a Little Dream is definitely like keep your ears to the grindstone for that one. We're definitely going to be doing that at some point. I fucking love that movie.
Wow.
Okay.
Really? You guys hate it? Tell me.
I thought it was just a chick flick.
I don't hate it.
Come on, man. That man, dude.
I hated his...
His Michael Jackson-ness?
Yeah. He was going through.
I think I'm firmly in like... That's firmly a 5 for me.
Oh, shit, and dude. No, dude. That's a must watch. That is a must. I don't know why. I think it's maybe because I like Justine Bateman so much in that movie. Okay. Like, I am in love with her in that movie. But
well, they did License to Drive.
Wasn't that one of the 80s, 90s genre of body switch film?
Yes, it was a body switch movie, but it was also, it had all these metaphysical things going on. Piper Laurie and Jason Robards and like, I don't know, man. I don't know why. Maybe because there's also that Michael Damian cover of Rock On in there that I'm like, oh,
I
shit.
Did love that song.
Yes.
Was it like a teeny bopper version
hey,
of Prelude to a Kiss?
Kids, rock and roll, rock on. Ooh, my soul. It was so badass.
Yeah.
We're chasing the squirrel.
And now, this insight to the clone's brain.
Well, I mean, we could talk about the soundtrack of this film because I owned that shit on CD for sure. I had the Lost Boys soundtrack. And the one thing I wish was not on it was that Don't Let the Sun Go Down on Me by Roger Daltrey that comes on during the credits of this movie. It's just like, why in the hell did that shit need to be included? Totally off base. But everything else was great. Everything else on that was awesome.
And you don't get a much more 80s band, especially for a goth band, than Echo and the Bunnymen.
Oh, my God. Echo and the Bunnymen covering the Doors.
Yes.
Jeez. And
they could have just gone with Killing Moon.
Mm-hmm. Oh, another favorite. That when Dude,
that would have worked perfectly for them.
And you know that that's in Donnie Darko, right? Like, where that comes in Donnie Darko at the beginning is, like, perfect. And then Donnie Darko has a director's cut where they changed it to some other Echo and the Bunnymen song. And you're like, fuck you, man. Why do you take the good things about the theatrical and change it? Which probably would result if they wound up doing a director's cut of this, you know? So maybe just buy the Blu-ray and watch the deleted scenes like I did.
What they got.
I mean, like, so many scenes in this are just like, you know, they define periods of time, you know, memory-wise. Like the bonfire, the attack at the bonfire. Listening to Walk This Way. Like, what the fuck? Like, what a weird, like, would there be a group of beach Nazis drinking and listening to Walk This Way? The Aerosmith Run DMC collaboration there?
In 1986, absolutely.
Just going back to the bonfire scene and the boardwalk scenes and just all that, I honestly thought, oh my God, this is what teenage life is.
Ugh.
Over on the coast, which, you know, the same thing growing up watching John Hughes films. I'm like, I can't wait for high school. Yeah. It was not anything like that.
It was a false promise. Again, always lied to by the entertainment industry, sadly. But yeah.
But can I also say that when Jason Patrick kind of comes out as a vampire to his brother, he took it really well. Okay, I don't think I'd have taken it that well.
Well,
even though he was freaking out, he still took it a lot better than I would have.
Yeah, at first he doesn't take it so well, though. He calls the restaurant his mom is at the date with Max at and says, like, he's trying to kill me. I mean, like, it was like, when I watched this, one of the things that I was sort of, like, laughing at was, like, oh, yeah, look how fucking ridiculous this is. Like, first of all, this is the pre-cell phone, pre-everybody's-got-a-cell-phone time. So, like, they had to call the restaurant. The restaurant had to go to the table and say, hey, you need to go take this call. And then she had to go over to the phone and be hearing the kids screaming about somebody flying around outside his window. It was a little like, oh, my God. You know what I mean? Like, my mom would have killed me if I did this to her.
Especially, like, recently divorced and finally going on a date. Yeah,
right.
That's going to end well.
Yeah, yeah. And but at the same time, I think there is something, like, you hit on something with, like, the way this movie handles moments like that. Like, when he's like, you're a goddamn vampire. And he's like, no, come on, help me. And he's like, well, then what are you, some flying nun? And he just goes, I'm your brother. Help me. And that, like, hits him. Like, you see it in his face. For as much as the Coreys were, like, a pop culture thing, they were good actors. You know, for kids, like, they kind of set the stage for the Macaulay Culkins and the Haley Joel Osments who came later. You know what I mean?
They also set a stage for, this is why you shouldn't let your kid be a child actor.
Yeah, the Lindsay Lohans as well. Yeah, yeah. They definitely were like, we're setting the record for the Hollywood tragic story. And, of course, you can go on YouTube and see all kinds of videos about the Coreys where they have these, like, after their friendship kind of ended at some point, it came out that they both had been victims of, like, sexual abuse by different – alleged sexual abuse by different, like, you know, power people in Hollywood.
It's that plus the drug abuse, the alcohol abuse.
I mean, I think everybody obviously pegged Corey Feldman to be the one who was going to die tragically young. You know, like, it's not a secret that he was the one that everybody really considered to be the troubled of the two.
And looking at what a mess – well, I mean, obviously, Corey Haim did pass away from pneumonia.
Unfortunately, which rest in peace, Corey Haim.
But Corey Feldman hasn't exactly seen a career resurgence. He hasn't pulled off the Robert Downey Jr.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, he hasn't managed to pivot.
I remember
– well, I know they had – I think it was the two Coreys. They had a reality show for a little while.
Yeah.
And it was more recently because I never watched fucking reality shows.
It was only one season, though, I think. But I even remember.
He passed away, right?
I even remember, like, when.
Yeah, I think he did.
Corey Feldman popped up in, like, the Tales from the Crypt Bordello of Blood, you know, and you saw his name in the opening credits. You're like, oh shit, Corey Feldman's in this.
It's
yeah.
like, oh, man, he's still alive.
Hell yeah, man. Good for him, dude. Good for him. God damn.
It is kind of sad, though, when you look back and you see, you know, the people that were more iconic, I guess, in my mind, like the Coreys, and you had Alex Winter who went on with Bill and Ted, and you, like, never seen him again.
Although he does have a couple random, like, did you ever see the movie Freaked that he starred in?
No.
Oh, no. That's a great one. Check Freaked Out, where him, Randy Quaid, and a whole bunch of other people I never heard of it, but I caught it on cable in the 90s, and it was like a direct to cable movie about a freak show, traveling freak show that Randy Quaid runs, and Alex Winter is in that. Check that out.
I mean, there's really only four that I feel like did anything, and you guys can totally correct me if I'm wrong. You have Diane Wiest, Bernard Hughes, which was, you know, he was huge previous to that. Not huge, like, in general, but, you know.
He was the grandfather?
Yeah.
He
was the Edward Herman, and then Kiefer Sutherland. Like, even Jamie Gertz and Jason Patrick, they had careers after, but I don't feel like they had as strong of careers as those four.
I think Jamie Gertz did a lot with ER, and I think she did a lot with smaller screen.
Well, okay. She also, I mean, Twister, she had a very prominent role in Twister. Right. Like, there were, like, random movies like that where you're like, oh, Jamie Gertz from Lost Boys. Hey, how are you?
I mean, I could also be completely and just point out the fact that male actors overall have an easier time over time.
Mm. Yeah, that's true.
Then,
that's a whole other podcast.
Although, I would say Jason Patrick is a pretty interesting sort of antithesis of that, because after a movie like this, you'd think he would have been all over the fucking place. Like, especially from the way, I mean, I can really only go based on, at first, the way my mom, I mean, she would always just talk about how, like, gorgeous he was. And I'm like, you know, then why the hell wasn't he doing, like, a million movies, you know?
Because Kiefer Sutherland was gorgeous and talented.
Ooh. Wait, all right. Have you seen a movie called Narc that was made in, like, the early 2000s starring Jason Patrick and,
I mean, I could also make the argument that Kiefer Sutherland had made better career choices as far as the roles that he took on.
Yeah, and
opportunities that he kind of went after.
There also is this thing that I've only been sort of clued into by some of the actors I've worked with professionally for work, who have also done commercial projects, and I work in the corporate industrial world, and they've told me that there's, like, a certain way that, like, there's, like, agreements between different agents sometimes too, where they, like, will elevate one and keep another down. You know what I mean? And that maybe, like, I don't want to say that that's a situation here, but definitely if Kiefer Sutherland, who's the son of an already famous actor and is already kind of on a trajectory, you know what I mean? Like, you're going to get preference.
Hey, I mean, it's sort of like the Drew Barrymore effect. Was she able to leverage that to get more roles? Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
Without question. Did she think, has she grown as an actress and then moving behind the camera as well? Yes, sure. She has talent, but trying just getting your foot through the door and being able to leverage that is a tremendous advantage.
I mean, probably
we will see Jason Patrick soon. He's coming back to the small screen
on
Wayward Pines.
Nice. Holy shit. That's awesome. Oh my God. Hashtag awesome. I am like, I actually am a big Jason Patrick fan. There's a movie called Friends and Lovers that if you haven't seen, it's fucking insane. And Jason Patrick is in that, and it's crazy.
But to move completely off base, I mean, would Sofia Coppola ever have directed a film if she wasn't Francis Ford Coppola's daughter?
Yeah, absolutely not. Absolutely not. Should she have directed a film even though she's Francis Ford Coppola's daughter?
I like Lost in Translation.
Oh, okay, I was there. Well, there you go. There's another podcast. We're just going to keep spawning podcasts here at the Hollow Knight Network.
We're good at that.
we're gonna say it's gonna be a podcast about the Lost Boys, but it's gonna like really be like a stomping ground for like, hey, let's do this, and then let's do this, and
well,
then
let's do this. Well, that's because I think we talked about a lot with, you know, this was
the
vampire movie that I think we were all introduced to, that it wasn't just classic Dracula.
But it also
it was
featured,
something different.
It's interesting too that we're doing it after Monster Squad, because there's a little bit of a Monster Squad element to it, where like the Frog Brothers really consider themselves these like fully professional vampire hunters, like that they run a comic book store for their parents because they have to, but they really are basically hunting vampires. And then could we assume this is the first time they've really actually gone after real vampires? Because, I mean, as soon as they kill one, they freak the fuck out. They're like, whoa, wait a minute.
They're amateurs.
Yeah, yeah. But they at least have the balls to, like, you know, try and do it.
And they had more knowledge than some people.
I actually am watching the film as we're talking about this. I just love the fact that the Frog Brothers show up in their gear, and like they've got this tiny little stake strapped to their bodies. The very next scene is Grandpa outside with the giant fence post.
Stakes. Yeah. Well, there's a lot. I mean, to go on that deep level, there's a lot in this movie that's like super smart filmmaking. You know, yeah. Like the idea of Diane Weist carrying the Lost Boy into the video store, and then the four Lost Boys coming in being a parallel. You know, I mean, things like that, where you're like, "Geez, damn!" Like, really, making movies is like you have.
Schumacher knew what he was doing.
You have to be this fucking, like, I don't know how to think like that. You know what I mean? Like, maybe once you're there and you have, like, a team of people and you're all kind of, like, looking at how it's working. And, you know, some of that, too, is also during the scripting phase. But, I mean, just to really, like, when you boil it down to, like, what goes into. And these are things that fly right over 90% of the people watching the movie, flows right over their head. It's just sort of like, oh, really? Like, when even sometimes when you try to tell them, they're like, oh, well, I still, like, liked it, and I don't want to think that much when I'm watching. It's like, yeah, but it's subconscious. Like, that's why you're not thinking about it, but it's still working for you because of that, you know?
Well, this is also where I'd like to point out that if all you know from Joel Schumacher is Batman and Robin...
Oh, please, God, no.
Please,
you
watch.
Really need to step back, watch this film.
At least watch this in 8mm, man. I mean, good God.
Yeah. And understand that the man knew how to put together a film.
Before he got sucked into that bullshit. You know what I mean? Like, dear
Before
God.
He needed a lot of money.
And really. I even go off. I mean, I wasn't a huge fan of the film, but I think that had more to do with the music. Phantom of the Opera was a decent film.
He did the Phantom of the Opera film?
Yes.
Wow. Clone learns something. Hashtag clone learns.
I know we didn't think it was possible, but sometimes
Clone has learned something new in every episode so far.
I'm trying. I am trying here.
This is why I brought Gomez in, man. I knew he'd be a good fit, and that he was always a lot smarter than me in school. That's where I met Gomez in college at the WAC.
Did we actually take any classes together? Even
I don't think so, because you were a year ahead of me. So like it was sort of like.
Much in college, but anyway.
I know, but still, it was like, I think you were just, you know, you were working on a novel, you had all kinds of shit going on. I was in the bands and stuff.
Diatribe! Back when you had hair!
Yeah, damn, man, wow, freshman year. I had hair down to my ass, it was crazy.
Oh my gosh.
Lost
Boys-esque.
I know, I actually was able to dress like a Lost Boy for Halloween one year, too.
It all migrated to his face.
Yeah, well, at least it stayed somewhere. Jesus. Because if it all went away, it'd be like, well, now we're in a sci-fi alien film instead of just the Lost Boy.
Don't want to know! Don't want to know!
Oh, man.
Why is all the hair on my head?
Let's come back.
Yeah, yeah. What have we not talked about?
We're chasing the squirrels, guys. Come on, that's my job. Damn.
What have we not talked about, Sean? What have we not talked about?
I was just going to say, I liked that when they do introduce the Max, that he does something from like the old kind of vampire movies. He has to be invited in, and he has to be invited in by the head male of
the
family.
Man of the house, yeah.
Yes, and I just like that, you know, they kind of pick these little things from what we kind of learned from, like I said, the old vampire movies. The tropes? They actually worked it in.
They're kind of genre rules more than tropes, but I don't know. They're both.
But even
tropes.
So, they worked in some of the mythology. I mean, but they also were brave enough to kind of not just follow
mythology.
I mean, you don't see any of the vampires transforming into bats. Now they can fly instead.
Although they do sleep upside down, hanging in that cave, which I do kind of like the idea too that they They turned this hotel that had collapsed into a fault line into a giant underground coffin. Like, that's their coffin. You know, like, they play with our expectations from knowing the usual tropes. Because
And this was 2 years before the Batman with Michael Keaton had him sleeping upside down.
And I like, too, they show their feet, too. It's like their feet became bat feet a little bit.
Right.
Little things like that I'm like, yep, this is a movie. It's awesome.
And they were able to stake one and then get out before the rest woke up.
Like, I can't believe we did this. We unraveled. We've rattled ourselves in the face of the enemy. It's like, all right, they pull the mind scramble as they open their eyes and talked.
We unraveled in the face.
I also love the fact that this is, I think, the first movie where you actually see the vampires kind of put their game face on.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah, they said that this is the first time the term vamped out came to light, and that was used years later with Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
I think Buffy the movie was like 5 years later.
Oh, my God.
I thought it was longer than that. I thought it was 10.
And I love how the movie is nowhere near as cool as the show was. You know what I mean? Like, the movie's awesome.
Josh Whedon did get a chance to develop more, I think, kind of the direction that he wanted to take it in with the series as opposed to the movie.
They kind of do the same thing with the vampire face itself, too.
Yep.
Mm. Yeah. So, I mean, like, how they just look angry. They have angry eyes all the time.
Yeah, they also had a little bit of, like, a panther-like quality to them, I guess. I don't know. I always likened it to, like when Michael finally changes, like, during the assault on Grandpa's house at the end. Like, Michael has had stuff happening, but we've never seen him really vamp out. When he finally vamps out, I'm like, oh, dude, they awoke the tiger. The tiger got out of the cage, man, and that's it. It's over now. So is mine! weird line from the hero at the end of the movie. I'm sorry,
I'm trying to think of what we haven't talked about.
We haven't talked about Corey Haim singing in the tub. We didn't talk about that.
I can't say that's fan service, because that's like kind of familiar right there.
That was just like, all right, what do you feel like doing in the scene? Can I sing this really gay song? And like singing into my comb. I don't know.
Going back to what you're saying about the smart filmmaking, I love the fact that, you know, when Michael's drinking, drops the milk carton after he drank the bottle of wine.
Yes.
And then you get a brief glimpse of what's on the carton. And then later, Laddie, when the mom puts it back on the counter, it zooms in. You're like, oh, hell shit, that's Laddie.
Laddie is a missing. And that the missing persons board gets the, we see somebody putting up a poster for the security guard that we know gets killed at the beginning of the movie. I like that they jawsed it up for a long time. Like, we didn't see the vampires in action until the very end of the movie. Everything else, it was all throughout the movie, was implied with camera angles and, like,
it was a very Sam Raimi-esque.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Very Evil Dead. I love it.
Can we talk about the Chinese food?
Yes. We can talk about the Chinese food.
The maggots and the worms.
Oh,
it was the weirdest thing, and let me tell you, it creeped me out trying to eat Chinese food for a while after. I'm like, I have both
rice and lo mein in my fridge right now.
so are you going to eyeball it? Like,
why? So here's a question. What the hell was in that joint they passed to?
Yeah, right. Or were they mind controlling him, right? Wasn't it like hypnosis, like the vampire dark gift of like...
Wait, let's face it, the pot helped.
Well, yeah, they need to lower the inhibitions, man. Have you seen What We Do in Shadows, this newer sort of written by Jermaine Clement, and his partner in crime is an actor we've seen in movies, another New Zealander, but I can't remember his name right now. I will IMDb it while I'm talking to you guys, but it's a... modern, like, it came out last year. It's a movie that's like a mockumentary, very, like, I guess, kind of Spinal Tap style, and it's supposed to be about a documentary crew following this group of vampires that all live together. It's almost real world-ish. And there's like a vampire who's 8,000 years old, who's like a Nosferatu. There's a vampire who's like 1,200 years old. That's Jermaine Clement. He's like a Dracula. There's another one who's like from Romania, who's 800 years old, and he's sort of like a rock star. And then there's one who's like 500 years old, and he's like kind of like a Victorian era dandy, I guess.
Gotcha.
And what they do when they bring people over their house is they do this. They like put like Chef Boyardee spaghetti on a plate, and then they say, "How are those worms you're eating?" And now what this movie does, because it's a mockumentary, they don't show the food as worms, but they show the people freaking out, like, oh my god, there's worms on my plate, there's worms on my plate. And they say, of course, you know, we've stealing this from The Lost Boys. That's one of our favorite movies. But, you know, this is one of the most fun things we can do as vampires when we play with our food.
We mock the mortals.
Yeah, it's such a great movie. If you're into, like, if you liked Flight of the Conchords, any of the other things that Jermaine Clement was involved in, What We Do in Shadows is definitely...
I have to definitely put that on the list. So I almost want to ask. I feel like we have to ask at this point.
Taika Waititi is the other guy who wrote it, by the way. Sorry, go ahead.
As far as vampire movies go, where do you put this on the scale? Because obviously there's like... Because there's such a diverse array of vampire films that are out there.
It's really hard to do this one because there's been some amazing, like, I don't know if you guys ever seen Blood and Donuts, and I loved that one. I don't know why. I was going through a weird artsy black and white thing when I was watching it, but.
Are we saying like we're comparing it to things like also like Interview with a Vampire, Bram Stoker's Dracula,
and then you got From Dusk Till Dawn, is the more campy.
But still, it's such really a badass. Hard. Yeah,
I would have to put this in my top three just because this is one of them that I watched really early, and I watched the hell out of it because it really did introduce me to vampires that weren't the classic vampire. Because I had watched the Bela Lugosi Dracula, and like I said, I seen Nosferatu when I was young, which is really weird because that's not something most kids watch when they're young.
Not when you're young, no.
I mean, and to be honest, I mean, I saw this probably in high school.
Yeah.
And I got very into World of Darkness at that point in time, the role-playing game.
Oh, wow.
And Vampire.
Oh, my God, I always wanted to play that.
I've never played
really, it. Really, I mean, you could basically, like, trace a direct lineage from where they were going, especially in the art direction with that, and sort of the goth punk.
Yeah.
Hesitate to call it almost subgenre, and this film, like you're like, oh yeah, so basically they're trying to create Lost Boys the role playing.
Yeah. It's nice. I mean, that would be a cool universe. I mean, the idea that like you know there are head vampires. You know, I think to me, whenever I would watch a movie like this, I'm like, oh, so this is like an encapsulated, isolated incident of just one of several possible scenarios of this happening throughout the country. Like, there have got to be other master vampires out there. Max can't be the only one. And there have to be other little roving, like, gangs of Lost Boys. Maybe there's one that's not all motorcycle riding boardwalk people. Maybe there's one that's a band, you know what I mean? Or maybe there's one that's, like, a group of, like, survivalists who live out in the woods. You know, there could be all different, like, kinds of Lost Boys, you know what I mean? Like, there could be a gang of criminals, like a bunch of dudes who rob banks. There's this whole, there's a song by the group Foster the People. What is the name of this song? I'll have to look in my iTunes and find it real quick, because I always would listen to this song and picture it as a bank robbery being pulled off by vampires. You know, that by the time that the cops got in there, it was like there was just a pile of bodies in the middle of the place all drained of blood. But it would be this really cool Heat-esque kind of like vampire bank robbery going on. And, you know, it's neat to think that there's like the idea of like a universe created by the Lost Boys. You know what I mean? That this... You know, could Helena Beat is the name of the song, by the way.
Okay.
Just because you've mentioned that, and because it's one of my favorite songs, which is weird, Possum Kingdom.
Oh my God!
It was very vampire-esque to me.
Yes.
You'll stay as beautiful.
Right, and that's why when I watched the video, and I'm like,
and soft skin.
What is this shit? Yeah, and I was just listening to it, actually.
It's like, is that because I'm going to kill you?
Yeah, that sucks, right?
Like, or because I'm turning you into a vampire.
Vampire is a much cooler idea. Like, I always would go with vampire. Like, and to me, too, Interview with a Vampire really,
better.
I think I liked this Interview with a Vampire, Bram Stoker's Dracula. I kind of considered a trifecta of, like, defining the mythology of vampires. Like,
especially for this generation.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just saying, like, it wasn't just the vampire as boogeyman.
No, not at all. His vampire is empathetic character. His vampire is someone you wanted to be. You're watching the movie going, I know they're fighting these guys, but if I were Michael, it would be a hard choice. Like, I might have wanted to join them. You know what I mean? They looked like they were having a great fucking time.
But I don't want to kill my brother.
That's the only problem. I don't know how I'm going to feel with taking human lives, man. It's like, you know.
And you know what? Oh, okay. Don't throw things at me, people.
Oh, jeez.
That's the one thing with Twilight, because they didn't have the ones that took the human life. And I'm like, okay, they made a choice. And I kind of wish you had that in other. I'm not saying that was the best movie ever.
Well, no.
I'm saying, okay, but I wish that choice was out there with more vampire
films. I'll give you one after Gomez goes.
But here's the problem with that. That takes away from the tragedy of it.
You get to see life forever, but you have to kill constantly to survive.
You don't get to live. You're going to not live for – you have immortality with immortal youth.
Okay. And see, it all depends on what you're reading or watching too, because that changes over every different book that I've read, over every movie that I've seen. Because one, it's like you have to kill just one person a year.
or near dark. You have to kill somebody every night.
Yeah, yeah. Near Dark, they definitely make a big deal out of it.
Okay, what are you giving up from your humanity to then become that?
To have immortality. Is it still humane then? You know, like you're not really – well, obviously you're not human anyway. But –
Or like look at what happens with going back to Interview with a Vampire. Look at how inhumane Lestat becomes over time.
And then, like, later in Queen of the Damned, when they just kill entire islands full of people, you're like, oh, my God. I like that, like, I don't know.
Why should become this?
There's the short-lived TV show Kindred the Embraced that was sort
it
was based off World of Darkness. Yes.
Yeah, and The Masquerade.
Vampire the Masquerade, yeah.
And it also incorporated certain elements, like the pilot was totally just full of music from both Interview with the Vampire and Bram Stoker's Dracula. And in that, they survive in modern times by not killing, but only drinking what they need to. Or at least certain clans were sort of like that. And in Lost Boys, I don't get the impression that that was even on the on the table. You know, like that bonfire scene, they made it pretty clear. You have to kill people to survive.
Or they just made the it was never broached that, hey, you know what? We could just take what we need.
Right. We could survive off rats if we wanted to.
And that wasn't even a question. It's like, no, you know what? We actually kind of enjoy killing.
Yeah, fuck those guys.
They seem like little entitled assholes
anyway. Yeah. So. Well, and, you know, God forbid we run into people who haven't seen this movie. Do you definitely recommend it? Do you not definitely recommend it? Are there caveats?
Definitely recommend it.
You need to see this movie. And especially if you're ever wondering, I want to go back to my earlier point. Take out the vampires, and you've got a documentary of this was what 1987.
Yeah, nice. And I also think it's a, listen, fuck Twilight, man. You know what I mean? Like, if you want to talk about teen vampire shit, this is it right here. This is like, you know, Twilight is what it is, but this is, like, cool. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. To me, there's so much about this movie that was sort of, like, set benchmarks in my mind for like what it's going to be like to be older and be cool. You know what I mean? And so I think some of the subconscious of Clone was based on like Jason Patrick crossed with David, aka.
And here's the key though. Be more like David, less like Michael.
Yeah, 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 man. My blood is in your veins, bitch.
And if you like the girl, talk to her. Don't
exactly.
Stalk her.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Be direct. They like that from what, what I understand. Well, thank you guys for checking in. Heard. I know this was like a very unorthodox covering of The Lost Boys. We didn't even talk about the way they killed all the vampires at the end and some of the deleted scenes. There was actually a deleted scene showing that the stereo was overloading the circuitry of the house whenever they turned it on. So shooting the arrow into the vampire into the stereo and having him explode from the overload kind of was like a little bit foreshadowed earlier, again, back to the smart filmmaking.
This was not, you mean this was in an alternate universe where they never heard of a capacitor?
Oh, there's that too. There's a possibility.
I mean, Star Trek universe.
Grandpa's
never heard of a fuse.
Grandpa's taxidermy farm shack is kind of out in the middle of nowhere. Who knows what they're running on out there?
Absolutely.
There was also a deleted scene where Sam tried to just take a leaf off of the pot plant growing outside the window and light it up and smoke it, and that's what led the grandfather to say, "Hey, you want to come with me on a trip to town real quick?" Because he kind of walks into the kitchen and catches him doing it, and that's what then they do the car in the garage, and, all right, let's go to town, turn the car off. Like, that's as close to town as I like to get.
I like Grandpa because of that.
Little moments.
I appreciate that more, because Clone will tell you, we went into college in the middle of fucking nowhere. But there was nothing but cornfields and a river.
It was bad.
That was it.
Although the farm party every year was fun as hell because of that. Did you go to farm party or no?
No, I didn't. I don't think I went to farm party.
Dude.
I was friends with townies, though.
Yeah.
So that was the first. I mean, my first deep fried turkey.
Oh, nice.
Was back in like 99. And I actually showed up right after the fire department had. Some brilliant light decided to throw their leftover of their whiskey drink into the fire.
Yeah, of course.
Shot the fireball up over the house.
Oh my God.
That's why they're awesome, but they're so dangerous to make the fried turkeys.
But yeah, so.
Yeah, if you want to see footage of both Gomez and I at that time, I think there's a video of some diatribe on my YouTube channel. Just look up diatribe on YouTube. If you don't know how to spell it, Google that shit. That's on you.
D-I-A-T-R-I-B-E.
I think there were other bands called Diatribe, too, and every once in a while I'll go on and there's, like, comments on our YouTube of, like, this isn't the real Diatribe. This is bullshit. I'm like, yeah, fuck you. We were, like, around for a year in college. You can eat me. I don't give a fuck. Fuck the real Diatribe. Anyway.
Did you guys sub prop Jazz Incubus?
Sub prop. Holy shit. Holy
sorry,
shit.
I'm just giving Clone a flashback.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
It looked like it was a painful one.
That's why I feel like Lost Boys 2 should have been like Lost Boys the Band. A vampire band would have been such a cool Lost Boys movie.
I think Nancy Collins wrote that book.
They actually look like a vampire band, you know, in this movie. Like, they look like a punk band. They just don't play instruments. They don't do anything.
They're fashion punks.
Who ride motorcycles.
It's 1987 the movie.
Yeah. 1987 the movie. Dear Lord. All right, well, I think that kind of wraps. I mean, is there anything we missed? Is there anything you guys that we didn't cover that you guys want to chat about? Or
I think that pretty much wraps it up.
It was an interesting bouncing around of the Lost Boys, the 1987 film, directed by Joel Schumacher, starring Corey Feldman, Corey Haim, Jason Patrick. Diane Wiest, Edward Herman, and Kiefer Sutherland, and Alexander Winter. Bunch of other people who... Oh, Jamie Gertz. Jesus Christ. How could I forget Jamie Gertz?
you can't forget her.
So hot. Star. So hot. There's actually a deleted scene on the disc that's just them fucking for like 5 minutes. And it's like the camera goes back and forth like it was on a rail.
Was that a deleted scene or was that Joel Schumacher just storing footage?
I guess. I mean, it was basically an extension of what's in the movie. You know, it just lasts like most of the song. That thou shalt not kill, but we'll fuck on camera. anyway, until next time. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just gonna say it's like every Highlander film ever.
Yeah,
like, the mandatory sex scene.
The sex scene in the first one though is really good. You know what I mean? Like
it still feels like. And now we must show some sex to go with our violence because this is the exploited song, sex and violence.
And if you live forever, you know you're fucking in every era. That's kind of how that's going to happen. So you got to keep your game up. You got to find out what the new women like. You know what I mean? Like, got to make sure you fit into whatever time you're living in.
Wait, there's more than two positions?
Exactly is what I'm saying. Oh my God. You know what I mean? So until next time on that note, I have been Dave the Clone.
I am Gomez, not Adams.
I'm Sean Fangirl-S.
And we're just a bunch of Lost Boys and Girl here over at the Hollow Knight Network. Feel free to reach out and touch us, join the conversation, and enjoy the movies what we watch flipping around at 3 a.m. on cable saying, what am I watching? Next time, Who knows? Who knows what it's going to be? Near Dark, maybe, I guess?
You never know.
No more Dazed and Confused. Who knows?
Yeah, we're Dazed and Confused about what it's going to be. So just tune in and find out. Until then, take it easy.
Lost in the show.
I still believe.
I'm sorry.
You've been listening to the Hollow Nine Network, bringing you the very best in fan-made media. Follow us on Twitter at Hollow Nine Cast. That's Hollow, the number 9, I-N-E, cast. Email us at hollow9podcast@gmail.com. Or find us at our home site, hollow9.podomatic.com. Be sure to check out our affiliate, fangirlzone.com. Find us on Facebook. Rate and review us on iTunes. Join in the fun. Hollow Knight.
I'm here.
The spinning circle of doom.
Spinning.
Oh, my God. So,
say hello to the night.
Everything that I was supposed to do today, it didn't happen.
Because of editing?
No, because I was trying to avoid editing. So I'm like, fuck it. I'm going to make potato soup. And so we had pork chops and fried potatoes. And I made potato soup and green beans. And I made a lot.
Fucking productive, really you.
I really didn't want to edit.
I will probably stay up and edit after we record.
I did carryout Indian food for dinner tonight.
Nice. Damn.
I've never had Indian food. I'm
what?
First of all, I don't have a gallbladder. So I'm really, really afraid to try.
I think that
Indian
could
food.
Actually be an issue, right? I mean, that's actually...
It's an issue with a lot of food. That so that's why it scares me.
Problematic, as they say.
Yeah, this was partly just celebration that we got our tax refund back, so we can't.
Oh, nice. It's Indian food for taxes.
Nice, get tax back.
Hold on a second. Let me grab a pen for a second. You guys keep talking.